Harry the Hammer with further review by Housecrafters. Housecrafters provides complete home renovation services with one call does it all. That includes exterior home services like roofing, siding, home additions, and much more. Call 716-646-NAIL.
Hello and welcome back to the latest edition of the Further Review podcast. Happy New Year for the Buffalo News. I'm Jay Skursky, joined by Perrin Keyes. Perrin, the Buffalo Bills seemingly closed out Highmark Stadium in grand fashion on Sunday. I say seemingly because I suppose there is still a very remote chance of a home playoff game. But we are going to operate on the assumption that Sunday was the final time in the current Highmark Stadium for the Bills and for 70,000 of their fans. And I think it was a fitting send-off for the place. Honestly, it was a stress-free win against a rather inferior opponent. But I think this game will be remembered very little for what happened on the field and more for what the atmosphere was like in the stands, in the parking lots. It was a 4, 5, 6, 7 hour celebration, depending on what time you got there to start tailgating. And that continued through the game. It continued after the game. I thought probably the moment where it kind of resonated was looking around as the game ended and no one left. Everyone was still in their seats. Watching the Goo Goo Dolls video, the song Iris is playing as highlights from Highmark, from 53 years of Highmark played on the Jumbotron. And I would say that, you know, the NFL season is a blur, right? It feels like week one and that comeback against Baltimore happened 4 weeks ago, not 4 months ago. But it kind of caught up to me in that moment, you know, when you realized like, wow, this really is kind of the end of an era here. And, you know, seeing a good deal of the players even staying on the field to watch that video, I thought was really a pretty cool moment inside that stadium. There have been many of those, particularly recently here during this stretch of Bills football. But that was one that I will always remember. I come at this from a different perspective than you, Perrin, obviously having grown up here and spending a lot of time in that stadium, even as a fan before it was my career of choice. But, you know, you've been around it here for a couple of seasons now and you've gotten to see it. So I'd be interested to hear what your takeaways were from yesterday as well.
You pretty much nailed it, Jay. It was almost sort of a, you know, the game's going to be a celebration. The day is going to be a celebration walking in. I, as many people did, I'm sure, I took a sort of a circuitous route to get into the stadium, sort of go around, you know, take a tour of the parking lot and so forth. I did the long pedestrian walk, the walkway that coming off of, what is that, Big Tree? Is that right? Or California, excuse me. You know, walked all the way from the end into the stadium with the fans, with my camera going and stuff. And it's this sort of weird is probably the wrong word, but sort of this very kind of high, low, left, right, across the emotional spectrum that you saw and felt with the fans. You know, on one side, as I'm taking this video, you see clearly two old-time fans hugging each other. Now, I don't know if those, you know, maybe those two hadn't seen each other in 30 years, and that's why they're hugging it out, right? But it certainly felt in the moment, you know, as an innocent bystander, that these two are sort of going through it, right? And on the other hand, on the other side, you've got just people going absolutely bananas, as Bills fans are often wont to do, playing Mr. Brightside or whatever the song of choice is and so forth. But it certainly was a party atmosphere, an emotional atmosphere going into the game. Sort of felt like there was kind of a lull there during the game. At least that was me, that they sort of quieted down after the excitement of the start of the game. And clearly this is, you know, the game will not be remembered for its competition, obviously. But, you know, sort of got quiet. And then as the game winds down, I'm sure everybody's thinking, wow, this really is it. This is, 53 years of, you know, the Electric Company and Joe Ferguson and O.J. Simpson and, you know, all the greats from the 90s. And even, I'm sure, people in some ways lovingly reflected on the really bad years in the 80s and so forth and the drought and all that stuff. It was very, very interesting. You mentioned, Jay, obviously, that I'm not, you know, Buffalo born and raised, but, you know, of all the places I've lived, Louisiana is kind of sort of home. And, it was a moment for me looking at Tre'Davious White, a kid from Shreveport, Louisiana via LSU, who certainly came to Buffalo to, you know, with no emotional connection to that place or the team or the franchise or anything like that. And he teared up watching the video screen, watching all the highlights of the old greats, and was quoted in the Buffalo News as saying, you know, you think about all these legends who came there, came through and paved the way and things of that nature. And so, yeah, you know, for those of us who don't have a lifetime of memories, it was still pretty doggone poignant. And, you know, whatever your stadium, which, of course, the Superdome would have been the big thing for me. And you think about 50 years, Superdome was built in 75. So it's about the same age as Highmark. And you think about all the great things that happened in that stadium. So, sure, you know, who couldn't be emotional about that? And it was a perfect way to end it in the sense that this game wasn't a thriller, or the Bills didn't get blown out or something like that, to where you really could just sort of focus on the moment rather than, you know, all the third and 12s and things of that nature. So it was quite a day, quite an afternoon. And certainly the fan response from all the stories you guys have written, I'm sure would reflect that.
Harry the Hammer goes to work.
Harry the Hammer here from House Crafters, and I am one happy hammer. We just finished this addition and kitchen, and it's beautiful. Look at this place. It's gorgeous. If you have a remodeling project in mind, a kitchen, bathroom, or mother-in-law apartment, one call really does do it all at House Crafters. For a free estimate, call House Crafters at 646-NAIL.
So even after the game ended, there was something to watch that was Bills-related. In addition to the competition and trying to figure out exactly what the AFC field was going to look like for the postseason, it was sort of like watching election turns, if that makes any sense. James Cook finishes his season in the lead for the NFL rushing title. And, you know, were he to hold on, he'd be the first Bills running back to do so. Only the second ever, the first to have done so since O.J. Simpson did in 1976. He gets into the game, two carries, 15 yards, and as you mentioned, or as you described in your story, Jay, that's at BuffaloNews.com today, there was sort of a give and take. How much does Sean McDermott keep James Cook in to give himself a little bit of extra padding for that lead, for the rushing title? And how much is it, you know, how quickly do you got to get him out of there? Because obviously the big thing is the playoffs. And then once that's all set and settled, he leaves the game. He has a 152-yard lead on Derrick Henry. But Derrick Henry plays on Sunday night. And, boy, I tell you, for everything, it sure looked like Derrick Henry was going to breeze to that title after the first half. And then it gets real interesting. It gets real interesting in the actual game between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens. But it also gets interesting in terms of, well, Henry's inching closer, but he's not running away with this thing quite literally. So just sort of set, if you would, Jay, go through that as you're watching in the press box this game unfold, just as the rest of us did.
Yeah, I mean, I would start with Sean McDermott's decision, and I describe it as kind of a no-win decision or a no-win situation for the head coach, because listen, the rushing title mattered to James Cook. He was very upfront about it. It mattered to his offensive linemen. In particular, I think it mattered to Josh Allen, to Sean McDermott. This is a big deal. You said it there. 1976 is the last time a Bills running back has done that. Thurman Thomas had looks at it, actually sat out in games where maybe had he played, he would have done it. And so for James Cook, it was important. And what do you do if you're Sean McDermott, right? Because he said in his postgame press conference, the original plan was he was going to give James Cook the first quarter. Well, as the game got closer, he said, that's too much time. And I understand where he's coming from, because if James Cook goes out there and gets two carries for 15 yards and Derrick Henry gains 155 yards, it's easy to point the finger to Sean McDermott and say, come on, man, you couldn't even have given him a series. He would have had it, right? Or he would have, you know, had a better chance at having it. But where's that end, right? If Derrick Henry rushes for 200, if Derrick Henry rushes for 240, as we saw him do just last week, you know, how long do you keep James Cook in? Sean McDermott's ultimate job and ultimate responsibility is to do what's best for the team, not the individual. And to do what's best for the team meant in whatever way possible to keep the team as healthy as possible in a game that had very little meaning outside of some seeding considerations. And so would I have liked to seen James Cook maybe get a little bit more work? Sure. But I can understand exactly where Sean McDermott was coming from. They said they wanted to get him up to about 150 ahead of Henry and take their chances. Well, it turns out that they had 26 yards to spare. And to your point, you know, you're watching that Sunday night game. We stayed in the press box late to close it down and watch it so I could update my story. And ultimately, it did end up being enough. And this is a nice feather in the cap for the Bills, for James Cook. I know everyone in the organization is very happy for him. I want to spin it forward, though, because obviously this is, you know, it's less about an individual, more about what this, you know, means. Not only did James Cook lead the NFL in rushing, the Bills as a team led the NFL in rushing. They have the number one rushing attack after the regular season. And obviously now all the attention turns to the postseason and the Jacksonville Jaguars and what the Bills can do in these playoffs. And to me, it's going to run through James Cook. I think he is the engine to this offense, which is crazy to say when you've got the MVP at quarterback in Josh Allen. But we have seen this offense be at its best throughout this season when James Cook is at his best. You know, you can look at the record when he rushes for 100 yards versus when he doesn't, outside of yesterday, obviously, excluding that game. But I think it's a good sign for the Bills and James Cook that they are heading into the postseason with a rushing attack that they can really rely on. And I would say even maybe more rely on, kind of lean on and build their offense and funnel their offense through.
So, Jay, the other important thing coming out of Sunday's game, aside from the result, aside from the whole slate of games and the playoff positioning and things of that nature, the Bills were able to sit a lot of guys against the Jets and keep them out of harm's way and keep them from being injured. They didn't come all the way cleanly out of this game, though. I think of particular note, not that this is a groundbreaking revelation that I'm coming to here, but a particular note is the right quadriceps injury to the kicker Matt Prater. And that seemed like sort of a little footnote coming out of that game with everything that surrounded that game. Bills and Jets with the closing down of the stadium and so forth. But as we move forward, that could be the most crucial muscle in all of Western New York, the quadriceps on the right leg of kicker Matt Prater. Certainly other players to go sort of run down the list, the injury list, and assess where they're at. But let's start, if we would, with the kicker. And certainly the issues that the Bills are going to have if they can't turn to Matt Prater and where they would even begin to start looking for a fill-in for him who has been at 41 years old, certainly pretty rock solid for the Bills as they go down the road here.
Well, it's a big deal, Perrin. You're absolutely right. I mean, we saw, you know, the last couple of weeks what happened when Prater was out. It was nothing short of disastrous. Michael Badgley came in and made immediate enemies throughout Western New York with his lack of, ability to make an extra point. And it impacted this team in a major way. I mean, not to get too far off topic here, but if Badgley makes his first extra point against Philadelphia and they kick an extra point to win that game, the Bills are the 5 seed right now going to Pittsburgh for a game instead of going to Jacksonville. So you want to talk about special teams. You want to talk about the importance of every play mattering, which you hear from coaches all the time. There's a pretty good example, right? And so when Prater went out, that was a big problem for this team. I mean, the free agent kicker market is pretty picked through. I don't anticipate we'll know until probably Wednesday whether, you know, Matt Prater is going to be able to go for this game. Clearly it's problematic though that he had this setback that he was unable to kick in the second half. You learn right at halftime that Mitch Wishnowsky, their punter, is kicking off, and so that's a problem. And so what does the team do, right? They've got to make a move, probably add a kicker to the practice squad, then promote him. Well, that takes away one of your promotions. You still only get two, and then that brings us to the need for a cornerback, right? Because Max Hairston, we see go down with an ankle injury in the fourth quarter, you're going to need to call up a cornerback as well. Well, if you got to call up your kicker and you got to call up a cornerback, you're out of promotions for the practice squad. And so, you know, injuries have been a story really throughout this season, and they're not going away as we get to the playoffs. You know, you mentioned at the start, being able to rest guys, and the Bills certainly did that. You know, I'm looking at the list here, guys that were not active for the game yesterday. Terrell Bernard was a calf injury. Jordan Poyer, a hamstring. Daquan Jones, a calf. And Joey Bosa was on the injury report with a hamstring. I think if it were the playoffs, he would have played. But Bosa's clearly a guy you want to rest. Deion Dawkins, Brandon Cooks, Greg Rousseau, those are vet rest guys. Did not play in the game. Connor McGovern, Matt Milano, Christian Benford, Shaq Thompson, Khalil Shakir, Taron Johnson. All situations where veteran guys, you're trying your best to limit snaps as much as you can. The Bills did a pretty good job of that, honestly. They were able to sit almost their entire offensive line. Osiris Torrance, the only guy that played up front. Defensively, A.J. Epinesa, T.J. Sanders, Max Harrison, Trey White, Cole Bishop got, I think, six snaps at safety. They're low in numbers at outside cornerback, at boundary quarterback. Benford is a guy, as I mentioned there, that they rested. He did not play. He was dressed for the game. Hairston's ankle injury is a big deal. The same way that Prater's quad injury is a big deal, because now you're looking at Trey White and Christian Benford. You need them healthy. You probably got to call up Dane Jackson if Max Harrison isn't going to be out there. So I don't know that they are in a terrible spot injury-wise going into this game, but I certainly would not say that they're in an ideal spot, because even some of these guys that didn't play, you know, they're banged up. You know, I know Connor McGovern's playing through a lot. Matt Milano, you know, you're trying your best to keep him healthy. Bosa, as I mentioned, probably their biggest, most impactful pass rusher on a consistent basis. You need him to be ready to go in this game as well as Rousseau. And so I think the overall approach from Sean McDermott yesterday was the right one. Obviously, we didn't even mention Josh Allen. He gets, you know, one snap to keep the consecutive game streak going. But, you know, I think his foot injury has impacted him the last couple of weeks, too. So this was a valuable week for him to be able to limit some of that physical activity in terms of game activity. We'll see what that does for Allen, because obviously, you know, when you get to the playoffs, it sort of starts and kind of ends with your franchise quarterback. And so being able to take some wear and tear off of him in week 18, I think can be a good thing for this team moving forward.
Okay, so here we are. It's playoff time, Jay. We will open the first round, the first weekend of the AFC playoffs with, first and foremost, obviously, the Bills and Jaguars at 1 p.m. Sunday on CBS down in Jacksonville. At least in terms of weather, that's a good draw for you and your colleagues, Catherine Fitzgerald and Lance Lysowski. Go down to Jacksonville, get a little sun, remember what that looks like. The Bills open up, the sixth-seeded Bills open up against the third-seeded Jaguars. The Bills are actually a 1.5-point favorite on the road. The Patriots are going to play they'll host the Chargers. The Chargers are the seventh seed. The Patriots open up as a 3.5-point favorite. And Texans and Steelers, sort of in a low-key, this looks like it might be some old-fashioned football. Texans, 3.5-point favorite against the Steelers, who sneak in on a wild missed field goal at the end of the game against Baltimore on Sunday. So it's an interesting card coming up. And of course, we start with the Bills opening up against the Jaguars. We're doing a little quick research, and you see that first and foremost, at least on the surface, Jacksonville looks like a decent matchup for the Bills. In terms of the Jaguars offense versus the Bills defense, assuming, and that's a big assumption, that the Bills are relatively healthy. Jacksonville 18th in total offense in terms of yards per play, at 5.2 yards per play. But the real big interesting thing, I think, of course, is Jacksonville is tough against the run. Just sort of initial thoughts about the Bills and Jaguars, and then of course the rest of the playoff field.
Yeah, parents, were, you know, as you mentioned there, just in a little bit of research here before we went on the air, the thing that stands out to me, at least defensively for Jacksonville, the number one rushing defense in the NFL, 85.6 yards per game allowed. We talked earlier about James Cook and the rushing offense for the Bills, which led the NFL with nearly 160 games per. So Jacksonville is allowing roughly half of what the Bills are averaging. So this is a good-on-good, strength-on-strength type of a matchup. Some of the other numbers, though, that stood out to me, the Jaguars are only 30th in the league in sacks per pass attempt, just 5%. So You know, you we want to, you know, I mentioned earlier, right? You need your best players to be at their best in the playoffs. Not exactly groundbreaking analysis there. This is a Josh Allen game. This is a game where, hey, if you've got time to make throws, you got to make them. Now, you could also spin that into saying this is a Joe Brady and wide receivers game. They got to scheme them open, right? Because if the Jaguars aren't getting after the passer and they can shut down the run, well, then it's got to be the air attack, the aerial attack that sort of carries the day for the Bills. That's probably not going to sit well with a lot of people. That's going to make some people pretty nervous about this game because that has not been the Bills' strength on offense, and that is probably an understatement. They need to figure that out, right? Especially if on the early downs, the Jaguars are having success in limiting or slowing James Cook, it's going to fall on Allen, as it so often does in the postseason. You mentioned the defense. Jacksonville's numbers offensively, I think, are you have to be careful in sort of how you interpret those, because they have been a much better offense since the trade deadline when they acquired Jacoby Myers from the Raiders. That has been a move that has really, I think, kind of spearheaded that offense to making some big improvements. And as we talk here, I'm just kind of pulling up their schedule. If you look at their last, well, first of all, they have closed the season with 8 games in a row, an 8-game winning streak to close the season. And just look at the points scored in those: 35, 27, 25, 36, 48, 34, 23, and 41. So they have been getting it done offensively here, and that corresponds almost perfectly to when they acquired Myers. I think it may almost exactly. 9 out of 10 from since their bye week, they've won, including 8 straight, as I mentioned there. And so now you will also look at this, and you look at some of these opponents here. Since November 30th, they've had the Titans, they've had the Colts. I want to say that might be the game where Daniel Jones tore his Achilles. They've had the Jets. We saw them yesterday. They had the Colts again. Certainly with no Daniel Jones, and then they had the Titans again. So it has not been a murderer's row that they have played. Now, I say that while also pointing out that they did go to Denver 4 days before Christmas and beat the Broncos, who ended up being the number one seed in the conference. So I think that's a long way of saying this is a very legitimate opponent. I think that you could make a case in a lot of ways that the winner of this game, I think, might be the favorite to make the Super Bowl coming out of the AFC. And that's a tough draw for the Bills in the wild card round. Bills got nobody to blame but themselves for that, though, right? You go to Miami and lose a game. You lose a game to Houston that you wanted to pull out. You lose a game to Philadelphia. Well, what happens? You have to go on the road. And this is an area that the Bills have very, very clearly struggled with under Sean McDermott. They are 0-5 on the road in the postseason. That is not a small sample size. There's a lot to prove, both for the team and for the head coach, that they can go on the road and beat a quality opponent in the playoffs. It's something that, you know, frankly, they have not done. And I think the Jaguars would certainly qualify as one of those quality opponents. And to the point where I said earlier, and I'll reiterate, I think that the team that wins this game, in my mind, will have the best Super Bowl odds coming out of the AFC. We will be back on Monday to discuss that game. For Perrin Keyes, the executive sports editor, I am Jay Skursky. Thank you so much for watching the Further Review podcast.
This is Harry the Hammer for Further Review by House Crafters. House Crafters provides complete home renovation services with one call does it all. That includes interior home services as well as windows and doors. Call 716-646-NAIL.